Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our guest is another social worker, so that's always exciting for me. Shannon Petrovich is an LCSW and the LISAC and board certified. She's a therapist, author, and YouTube creator. Shannon earned her bachelor's from Bowdoin and her master's in social work from the University of Connecticut. She earned her clinical licenses in social work and substance abuse counseling. So that's what that is. LISAC is licensed. Independent substance abuse counselor. Okay, and she's a board certified diplomat in clinical social work. Shannon's new book, Out of the Fog and Into the Clear, Journaling to Help You Heal from Toxic Relationships, has attained Amazon bestseller status and self-help for abuse, codependency, and personal transformation. On her YouTube channel, Therapist Talks, and I checked it out, she has a lot of subscribers. I was really impressed. She shares insights, information, perspectives, and strategies on a wide range of relationship and mental health topics. With a trauma-informed, strengths-based approach, she seeks to help people see the old stories that are in their way and to fully become the person they were created to be. So in the show notes, we will have her YouTube channel, which I highly recommend checking out. And then also the link to her new book. So Shannon, welcome. Is there anything in your bio I really messed up? You want to correct it right out of the gate?
Not at all, Karen. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a privilege for us. One of the things that we like to ask professionals that come on the show, and you're definitely a professional in the field, is why this work and why now?
It's been an interesting journey. I have been a social worker for 35 years, and originally I wanted to be a doctor or a veterinarian, but then I realized my passion was really in helping people and in mental health work and emotional growth work. And in my process of working, I think it was a few years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, that there were a lot of high-profile suicides. And I realized that there were literally millions of people around the world who have no access to mental health care and therapy services, and that most people are really watching YouTube these days. And so I thought, I really feel the need to share some of the things I've learned and some strategies and some perspectives and understandings that I think are important for everybody to learn. And we don't learn it in high school or grad school or college or anywhere unless you're majoring in social work. So I felt like there was a lot that I wanted to share. So I started the YouTube channel, and it kind of exploded, especially in the places of relationships and toxic relationships, and specifically narcissistic and abusive relationships, which was one of my first jobs, was in domestic violence work. So it seemed a pretty natural progression from there. And then I was running into a lot of the same questions over and over again. Well, how do you deal with this? How do you stop ruminating even once you've left? How do you get free from this kind of relationship when you're so trauma bonded? So I gathered all my YouTube information together and wrote a book and put that out a few months ago. And that's been very exciting. So I really sought to condense everything that I've learned and put together, and also to do it with journal prompts. So a lot of people use the journal prompts just to think about things or talk about it with a therapist or with just a beloved friend or family member. But some people really do write out all those journal prompts, and I think that's one of the best ways to heal. Mm-hmm. So it's written as an adjunct to therapy or as a self-help book if you don't have access to therapy.
I really love that. One of my early experiences going to therapy, the therapist recommended the book Parenting from the Inside Out.
Oh, yeah.
And it has all these prompts to write as well. And I remember just pen to paper and just writing that out. I had so many aha moments. So there really is magic with writing, with journaling prompts, especially things around trauma and self-discovery and exploring those pieces of you. Because usually when we think about things, it tends to go circular. It doesn't go as deep as when we write. So I love that you made that journal. And I plan to also get myself one. So I'll do that after today. I forgot to order it already, but I'll get to it. And I hope everyone listening also considers getting it as well. So I love that you have all these years in the field. I seldom meet anyone that has not given up on our field. You know, 35, you said 35 years, right? That's a chunk of time, you know. You know, I have 24 years in, and that's a chunk of time. So I know that there's this huge commitment to what you do. Like, I suspect it's a strong passion. I don't think you're doing this for the money.
Oh, no.
How did this passion to do social work come? And I know for a lot of us, it's because of our own backgrounds and maybe our own traumas. So whatever you're willing and comfortable to share about that, we would, you know, love to hear.
Thank you. I definitely do have some trauma history and have had some relationship issues in the past that have been extremely traumatic. And I think I bring that inside experience as well as the external experience to bear when I talk with people and when I was writing. And I think that, as you said, the journaling was really key in my early work for myself. I did a lot of journaling, a lot of writing, and I thought that was super helpful for me. So that's why I wanted to do a book that was journaling oriented. And growing up, you know, I had a wonderful family and a traumatic family at the same time. They were difficult and challenging. And I think part of what led me into social work and to have a passion for it was that I always felt like I was just making it up and that nobody was telling me how to handle anything. And I didn't know what to do. But we lived in Salt Lake City, and I would climb to the top of this mountain behind our house and sit and look out over the valley. And I think that was where I sort of had my spiritual connection, and that was where I found wisdom. So it was sort of my going to the wilderness, if you will. And it was those were my mountaintop aha moments. Mm-hmm. I was on the mountaintop, and again, I just felt like if I could help children, I originally really focused on children and then teenagers, and now mostly adults, but I really have always felt like if I could help another kid or teenager or now adult not have to fight through figuring it out themselves, I would love to do that because it was such a lonely feeling.
Yeah. Oh, I really love that you brought in the spiritual component, because I feel like that's one of the pieces that makes social work so beautiful, is that we're not just looking at people's heads, their brains. We look at the whole person, and we look at their environment and consider things like medical health, physical well-being, as well as spiritual well-being. Does your journal have different prompts for different pieces of people's well-being?
Absolutely. You know, we start in the beginning, and you know, people are healing from toxic relationships from childhood. But I actually start with the toxic relationship that you have with yourself. Because in my experience, personally, and with everybody I've worked with, is that the toxic messages from childhood then are introjected into our own mind, and we continually have like this verbally abusive relationship in our own heads. And that is the thing that you have to get rid of immediately, because if you get free of this toxic relationship and you still have that awful dialogue with yourself constantly, you're going to accept another one. And this was something that I really puzzled over when I was first in social work school. Like, why, when a person gets free of a toxic relationship, do we go right back into something just as toxic? And it's because the way we're talking to ourselves inside our own head 40,000 times a day, I guess, is the statistic, which is a lot.
A lot, yeah.
So if you think of somebody standing there telling you you're stupid, worthless, unlovable, etc., 40,000 times every day, that's awful. But that's what we're doing inside our own heads, and oftentimes so unaware of it. So in my early therapy work, I remember the first therapist I had, and this was in Boston, and I think it was just a really wonderful person. She said, "I want you to write down every time you say something negative inside your head." Well, after about 5 minutes, the pages were full. Oh my gosh.
I can't sustain this. The critic is alive and well.
There aren't enough trees in the planet. This is not going to work. And it was this massive, like, oh, wow. And so we worked on that. And that was so eye-opening for me. So in my book, I really start with that piece. And so I have people really work that through and then talk about where did these messages come from? And it isn't necessarily that somebody said something directly. Sometimes it's the way we interpret, like as a kid. So if things are really chaotic, we may feel like a burden. And mom or dad didn't tell us we're a burden, but we feel like a burden. Or if, you know, mom or dad has an addiction or, you know, any chaos in the family, any kind of stuff like that, we internalize it personally. Because we're kids and that's our magical thinking. We think it's about us. So whatever those messages are, we need to flush them out. Then we need to figure out who they came from and where they came from. And then we need to start looking at our own actual sense of self. So even though I say these nasty things to myself inside my own head, what do I actually know about me that I actually like and respect? And so a lot, I always ask that in my sessions, and a lot of people will just be baffled at first. But then as we have that conversation, they can see, well, yeah, I'm a really compassionate person. I'm very empathic. I'm a good friend. So they can start to find those actual character qualities that if they met themselves, they would like and respect about themselves. And so when they can journal about that and then look at the difference between these two things. So these are the old lies, the old stories, and these are the truths. And they're not like, you know, the old Saturday Night Live skit where he stands in the mirror and says, "I like me." It's not my bad.
I do have my clients do that sometimes, but more strategically.
But this is more specific. Like, yeah, I actually do like and respect those things about me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the first part of the book.
Well, it brings evidence to it, right? It's easier to believe that we have these awesome traits if we have specific examples that we can draw out and document. Like, oh, yeah, maybe my life does have meaning since I've accomplished X, Y, and Z. Yeah. You know, and then that evidence is there. So that's beautiful. Yeah. So other than journaling, what was really helpful to you in your healing journey?
I did groups. And I thought that was really healing. I think that was a lot of it. And then recognizing how I was recreating the toxic relationships in my own life and getting strong enough to let go and move forward. And recognizing that you can be thousands of miles away from that toxic person and not have left emotionally. So I also talk about that in the book, that you have to leave emotionally as well as physically, and talk about, and even sometimes you choose to stay in the relationship for a lot of different reasons. Maybe it's a parent who's toxic. Maybe it's an adult child and you have grandchildren you want to stay connected to. Maybe it's an ex-husband or ex-wife or ex-whatever that you need to stay connected to for some reason, for the kids or whatever. So I talk in the book about how to emotionally separate, emotionally step back so that you're watching the circus go by and you're not getting involved in it. You're not jumping into the cage with the monkeys. You're just
That's such a beautiful metaphor.
Not my circus, not my monkeys, but I do want to be able to play nicely in the sandbox. So I'm going to stay present, but I'm staying present within myself and I'm not getting drawn into the drama. And I'm watching, I'm going, oh, there they go again, doing that thing. Yep, I've seen that so many times before. It's not about me. Oh, there they go again, doing that thing. Oh, they're lying. That's so funny. Why would they think I would believe that? So you can kind of emotionally step back, emotionally take care of yourself, and stay present even in the relationship if you have to.
So even just this piece could help thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Right.
Yeah. Because almost all of us know someone that's toxic in our life.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a thing, and we're taught to avoid them. And like you said, it's sometimes they're part of our life for a variety of reasons. So having skills to manage it is pretty wonderful. Yeah.
I think so too. You know, I actually have seen and heard of a lot of people who have gone no contact with a parent, say, and sometimes I just marvel that there would be no contact and the offense, if you will, was so minor. So I think that it has become almost a thing on social media to, if somebody offends you, you just go no contact and don't ever talk to them again. And even if it's your parent or your kid or your ex-spouse or whatever, that you have to cut contact. And I did a recent video about that because I don't think that's necessarily so. And I think sometimes that disempowers us. Mm-hmm. Because we're saying to ourselves, I can't handle, can't handle, can't handle, can't handle. When in truth, a lot of times we can. And if the offense was minor or, you know, something that we could sit with and talk about that with and set boundaries around, then you can maintain that relationship. And I think sometimes people are premature to go no contact and then estrange themselves forever. And I think that's very sad.
Yeah. And I see that trend as well. Some of it's politics, some of it's religion, but the more we can tolerate differences and see what we do have in common, serves us all best, because we have more in common than not in most cases. Yeah. As humans. Yeah. All right. So that's helpful. I'm going to look that video up too. So I could recommend it as well. What else do you think is important for survivors to have in their toolbox? Because journaling is a huge piece. What else would be helpful?
So I talk a lot about self-care, you know, so we walk through some of the getting free. And I think part of it, so here's another piece that I think is really critical, is that we have two parts of our brain. And I really wish I had known this so much earlier, because we are taught in our culture to go with your heart and go with your, you know, if you feel like you're in love with somebody, you got to keep working on it. Not so. We can be so trauma bonded to somebody and they are not good for us. And we know that with our wise mind, but we don't acknowledge that the wise mind is what we have to go with. We keep going from this little amygdala inside our brain. So we have this little, I call it the monkey mind, because it's what we have in common with all the other animals. And it's just fight, flight, freeze. And that's all it knows how to do. And then we have our higher cortex, which is our rational, logical mind. So we can have the experience of being in love, that we think we are passionately in love with this person. And with our wise mind, we can say, they did this to us, they did that to us, they did this to us, they did that to us, they don't change, they lie, they cheat, they steal, they, you know, like all of that rational stuff goes out the window when you are in that fight, flight, freeze mode. And so we have to recognize that that little amygdala is trauma bonded to that person, and we have to quiet it down. And that takes a lot of self-care and self-calming strategies. I talk about that too. But any kind of prayer and meditation and self-calming and breathing, all of that calms down the amygdala so that we can actually function upstairs. So if you think about it as a computer, when this is going off, the computer goes offline. You know, and this is our God-given ability to fight, flight, or freeze. And we don't need that rational center when we're in fight, flight, freeze. And so it just goes offline. So we want to quiet that down so we can put that back online and we can rationally write down all the facts, just facts, and then make a wise decision and say, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. It is unhealthy for me. And then when the amygdala kicks up and says, but, quiet it down again and go with your rational mind. In the book, I talk about it as your radar reality. So if you're lost in the fog on a, you know, day in the bay in San Diego, and the fog has socked in solid and you can't see anything, you have to go by your radar. And it's terrifying. because those are the facts and they're right there in front of you, little green lines that say there's a rock and that's the shoreline and there's a big ship that's coming at you. You have to trust in that, and it's really scary and really hard, but you take that and you run with it and you sail through that fog. And that's what we have to do. We have to take our rational thoughts and rational mind, wise mind, and walk through that process of separating emotionally and even physically if that is necessary, and keep quieting down that amygdala and not letting it say, but you're in love with this person, all that other stuff. And again, I wish I had known that before.
Yeah, me too. I often say to my clients, you know, something like, through my personal and professional work, I've learned that you can love and let go.
Exactly.
When it's toxic, not healthy for you. Because I think this is a societal pressure too. Like, you know, we are taught that you fall in love, get married, and it's forever, no matter what, you know? And so I encourage people, because you fall in love, one, you don't have to get married. Like, you can make a decision like, okay, I have strong feelings for this person, but there's so many areas that we're not compatible. You can make a decision to end. And the same thing, if you're married and that person is toxic and abusive, you don't have to stay.
Yeah.
You know, it's, if it causes you your mental health, what do you have?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And a lot of us don't leave until we're completely bankrupted emotionally, spiritually, physically, and even financially. Mm-hmm. That's really sad that we let the bottom be so deep that crawling out of that hole is really a hard process. But there always is hope. And so we have to still make a wise decision and follow through. And then also in that process, it's really important not to beat yourself up for having stayed so long. Mm-hmm. My other experience, you've probably heard this a lot too, the first thing out of a person's mouth when they realize that they want to leave and they're done is, I've been so stupid. I go, wait, time out. You've been through an awful experience, and for you to now beat yourself up for that is awful. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Would you say that to your best friend? Right. And always the answer is no. And so we have to forgive ourselves. And recognize that it's actually our wonderful character qualities that kept us there so long. Loyalty, dedication, commitment, trying, believing in, trusting in. Those are wonderful character qualities that should be on your list of things I like and respect about me. Mm-hmm. But they have kept you there. So you have to recognize, okay, I need to develop a better creepometer, one of my videos, so that I don't share those wonderful qualities with another person who should have set my creepometer off and I should have walked away.
I love that creepometer. That's awesome. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I think people just learning that. So there's a couple thoughts I had. One is, a lot of times when I work with women and sometimes men, when they doubt their intelligence because of the unlucky in love processes they've gone through. And I just, you know, remind people that love has nothing to do with our intelligence. You know, our emotions, how we select partners, often is not, we're not using that part of our brain. And so, and even like most successful CEOs, like the most successful ones in the world have made love mistakes, you know? So, you know, just reminding people that sometimes when we're in relationships or we're not necessarily tapping into logical mind that whole time, we're using our emotional mind, and that marrying our logical mind and our emotional mind, that's when the wise mind takes over. Then we make more uniform. That's not the word I want. A little more conscientious decisions in relationships. And that's actually how I met my husband after some toxic relationships. I used my wise mind. I actually systematically thought about what I really wanted in a partner that was healthy, you know, and I got him now. So yeah, It can work.
It can work. Same here. My husband, my current husband, is really wonderful, and it was a process of really getting to know for a long period of time. So when I did the video, your creepo, how to develop a trustworthy creepometer, and the one thing that will undermine it every time. It's really important that you get to know somebody over a period of time. So you watch what happens when they get frustrated, when they are sad, when they're disappointed, when they don't get what they want. And when you see all of that, then your heart can be integrated with your wise mind, and you can say, yes, this person is really healthy for me. I see myself growing and being more myself in this person's presence, and I'm in love with them too. So mm-hmm. It's a much more healthy way to go about it. But the one thing that will undermine it, and I tell clients this all the time, if you get intimately involved too soon, that oxytocin goes off, and then you're in that emotional state of attachment, over attachment, before you even know this person very well. So when you have, oxytocin is the chemical in the brain that is released when a woman breastfeeds a baby. And so if that is released in your brain early in the process, and you feel that level of connection to somebody without really having that foundation of trust, you're in this really funny place of, it would be like handing somebody the keys to your car, the keys to your house, the PIN number to your bank accounts, and not even really knowing them well. You handed them your body without knowing them well enough to actually do that. So I really caution people not to go that extra step until they've known somebody a really long time and really trust them.
Yeah, that trust factor. That was really good. Your house, your car, your bank account numbers. Think about those people before you dive in too deep. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty sage advice. Sounds like you've been doing this for a minute. I hope everyone checks out the creepometer. I love that. Yeah. I think you should actually develop a tool and then patent it. It looks like a thermometer.
Oh man.
Next on Amazon. Buy your creepometer now.
Somebody's going to develop an app for that.
That's really great. Okay, so one of the things I really love to ask people that come on my show is, I'm a big biblio therapist. Like, I love really good books that have a solid message. I know there's a lot of junk out there, but there's a lot of good stuff too. And I would be curious if you have favorite books that you recommend to people about relationships or mental health in general.
Oh boy, I do. Bessel van der Kolk's The Body
Keeps the Score.
Keeps the Score is an obvious one. I really like the DBT stuff and the DBT workbooks. And sometimes I'll even have a client purchase the DBT workbook and kind of flip through it and pick some stuff and do it with on their own.
And, is it the Linehan one that you recommend or a different one?
Yeah. Martha Linehan is the be-all, end-all. Let's see what else. No, I'm just stumped right now. I don't remember anything right off the bat. I'll look around and figure it out.
Yeah, and it's always something you can, let me know, and I can always add it to the show now. It's like, anything that's...
Tara Brock's work. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Tara Brock's work is absolutely fabulous. Because she's a psychologist and she's also spiritually minded. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to encourage people to find and develop their spirituality in the same time that they're finding and developing their personal selves.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I love her work too. And she has some nice courses too on Sounds True. Okay. Yeah, so that's another resource. Okay, so anyone that's listening today who maybe feels a little hopeless, what tips or inspiration do you have for them?
Well, you're not alone. And one of the things that I think your podcast and all of your work and my Therapist Talks videos and the live streams that I do every other week, I think what we're trying to accomplish is helping people not feel alone, creating community where people feel known and heard and that their reality is validated, because part of what happens in a toxic relationship, and usually it happens right off the bat, is that the toxic person, in order to control and manipulate, they separate you from your people. So if it's friends or family or anyone else, they drive wedges between you and everybody else. And so you can feel very alone. And then when they feed you whatever reality they want to feed you, you get more and more baffled over time. And that's why we talk about the fog, the fear, obligation, and guilt of that toxic relationship. So there's that isolation and that gaslighting. So you feel very, very alone. And so I want people to know you are not alone. People have been through this. Millions of people have been through this. And like you said, almost every one of us has had toxic relationships to varying degrees over the years. And there is survival and happiness, and you can thrive. And then the whole last part of my book is really about self-care. And self-care can be everything from the very most basic thing, like breathing. Like, we stop breathing when we're in trauma. We tend to stop breathing, and we stop learning, and we stop breathing in the right way. So we need to learn to breathe deeply and learn to focus on soft nature things and to self-care and self-calm and self-soothe, all those things that have gone out the window in our frantic focus on that person's moods and emotions about to be, you know, abusive kind of episodes. So it's really important to learn all that self-care and to practice, because none of us are ever perfect at it. And we all have to learn and work on those things, but mostly that you're not alone.
Yeah, well said. So our listeners who want to learn more about you or be in contact, how do they reach you?
Therapisttalks.com is my web address, and there is a contact sheet there that you can fill out, and I will respond. If you want to comment on any of my videos, I always pull those comments, and I either address them right then and there, or I'll use that to talk about it in a live stream a couple weeks later. So those are ways to reach me. My private practice is pretty packed, so I can't really take new clients plus licensing. I don't have anybody outside of our state, but those are the main ways to contact me, and I will respond.
All right. Thank you, Shannon, for being an inspiration for so many. And I can easily say that because your YouTube proves it.
Thanks.
There's evidence that you can know. And you're doing beautiful work. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.